I didn't have a television when I was growing up. My parents wouldn't let one in the house, so my TV was radio. And every Sunday night, I'd listen to Casey Kasem tell his story about music. The story always had a climax, the number one song in the country. Now, I've known since the first Gulf War that Casey Kasem was Lebanese-American. That came out as Arab Americans pushed back against the idea that Arabs were the enemy. But here's something I only just found out about Casey Kasem. He was something of a leader for Arab Americans when it came to their identity in the U.S. James Zogby is a founder and president of the Arab American Institute. Dr. Zogby, how did Casey Kasem keep your own eye focused on your identity?
I first met Casey in the early 1980s. We had formed a group, the Arab American Anti-Discrimination Committee. I was the executive director. And during the Israeli invasion of Lebanon in 1982, Casey became very active with us. We went all over the country raising money for wounded children. We brought a group of wounded children over to the States, and Casey was one of the leaders in helping us raise money for that. He and I spoke at many events. And then in 1985, when we founded the Arab American Institute, Casey was there with me as one of the founders, one of the people who went to the White House to meet with Ronald Reagan. It was a hilarious event because it was scripted. The staff came forward and said, you will line up here. You will not say a word. The president will walk over to here to this X. He'll shake each of your hand and get a picture, and that's it. The president walked over, and Casey said, I want to ask you about why you're tolerating Israel's continued occupation of South Lebanon. And staff literally dove across the Oval Office to break us up. But by then it was too late. Reagan heard the question and started to respond, and a conversation ensued. He recognized Casey, obviously, and as a fellow Californian and a Hollywood personality. And so they had a pretty friendly conversation, but it was exactly what the staff didn't want to do. But that's the kind of person Casey was. He was irrepressible. He was very passionate and very committed. And he used his celebrity power for good.
He had such a huge pulpit to speak from. Do you wish he'd have used American Top 40 more to talk about the Mideast?
No. He did what he did, and he did it the right way. I mean, he earned the right to be who he was, the upbeat, the confident, the person who reached out to every type of musical taste and integrated it all and had a good thing to say about everybody. He took that and then translated it into his private life, into the kind of issues that he cared about. But I think if he'd mixed the two, it wouldn't have worked. And it wouldn't have worked in the way that it did. I mean, this was a success story. Somebody who became a celebrity because of the person he was, and then took that celebrity power and used it for the good. And I think he did it beautifully.
You know, James Zogby, we've heard that Casey Kasem was not a fan of a lot of the pop music he played on his show. So maybe we'll leave it to you today to pick the song, not a number one, but maybe something Casey Kasem really liked.
One of the great little moments in my life was meeting Freda Payne at Casey's house.
Band of Gold.
Band of Gold and Bring the Boys Back. And I was just so pleased to have a chance to meet Freda Payne through Casey Kasem.
Well, James Zogby, thanks so much.
Thank you.
James Zogby there, remembering his friend Casey Kasem. From the Nan and Bill Harris studios at WGBH in Boston, I'm Marco Werman, leaving you with Casey Kasem and his immortal sign-off.
I'm Casey Kasem. Keep your feet in the ground and keep reaching for the stars.